recreational drugs?
That depends, doctor. What do you define as drugs?
Medication.
No.
Cocaine?
Absolutely not.
Marijuana?
Yes!
Breaking news, recreational marijuana is now legal in New York.
Now to some breaking news. New York state lawmakers reach an agreement to legalize recreational marijuana.
So what does this mean for anyone looking to partake? Here's Eyewitness News reporter Derek Waller.
A lot of motherfuckers ain't gonna be making bread, I'll tell you that much. Shit is different, right? Just going to a store, be like, yo, let me get a pack of Kush. I ain't gonna hold you, man. I'm with it, but our motherfuckers gonna have to start selling crack. Or dope, or some other shit. Niggas ain't making money off that no more. Cuomo got that shit locked. Nigga, New York, they about to make $1 billion a year off a motherfucker selling weed. It's crazy. Motherfuckers wanna make money off that chicken. Gonna have to fucking get something.
Call the first one savage mode, my mood, that's what it was. 2016, we was running around, beat niggas up in the club. I know she around for the money, but act like she loyal, I don't feel the love. I'm so rich, get bored, might wake up, buy me a car just cause. Running.
All right. Welcome to another episode of the Savage Mode Podcast. My name is DJ Bruce, aka Planet B, and I got my co-host with me,
Irving, aka Fine Touch.
And
Malik. What's good,
Malik guys? Malik is back.
And looking fresh.
Yeah, everybody's looking crispy. Everybody's looking crispy today. Yes, it's beautiful outside in New York City. So we are trying to get this podcast done as quickly as possible so we can go back out in the streets. But no, this is another very special episode. It's the 420 episode.
Hey.
We will be talking about some monumental legislation that has passed in the state of New York in regards to marijuana legalization, and talk about how that not only affects, you know, New Yorkers in general, but the social justice aspect of it, as well as the economic aspect of it. But at the request of Fine Touch, we have a very special guest, and I will let him introduce our special guest.
Yes. So we bring a very cherished guest on the show. He's a community organizer, a political activist, probably one of the biggest socialists you'll see out in these streets, and a roboticist.
Okay.
A roboticist.
That is a very, very heavy introduction.
But we got special guest Ziggy Leacock here on the line. I'll toss it over to him to say a brief hello.
Yeah, what's up? Yeah, my name is Ziggy. I'm born and raised from the South Bronx in New York City, Mott Haven specifically.
BX.
BX. I help a lot of community organizers, you know. I have like a weird relationship with calling myself that explicitly because I do spend more time on my day job, so I sort of just volunteer a lot in activist organizations when I have time.
And what's kind of at the top of the list right now? Give us some examples of some organizations you've worked with.
So basically, most of my time has been in the Bronx Upper Manhattan branch of DSA, NYC DSA.
Okay.
I had officially joined DSA in like 2016-17, basically after the first Bernie wave.
Okay.
Kind of stuck around and then decided to just get involved directly. So at the moment, I'm currently serving on the organizing committee for the Bronx and Upper Manhattan branch.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
And that's been an interesting experience because the thing about DSA is it's mostly volunteer work, at least at the branch level. So, you know, really anyone who wants to get in can, you just kind of have to show up and help people do things to keep it short.
The DSA is a Democratic Socialist.
Yeah, Democratic Socialists of America.
Got it.
So when you say show up and do things, is that something that you can do via Twitter, or does that involve like?
No, you actually have to go outside. So, you know, there's a lot of like Twitter socialism, but like one of my things is I feel like I'm an adult now for real, you know, going on 33. It's my Jesus year. And I'm just like, you have to have some sort of actual agency in your immediate environment because you can't change your environment without exerting some type of control on it or impacting it directly. So, you know, if that involves you joining a food pantry and distributing food out of a park every Saturday morning to all the people that can't afford shit, that's better than, like, sitting at home on Twitter and talking about the people doing it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I like to shit talk with all of my, like, peers sometimes. It's like, you guys live in buildings and you don't know most of your neighbors in that same building. It's just like, how do we actually move towards a more equitable society without actually engaging each other directly? Like, it's not, if we're trying to be the opposite of capitalism, which is just individualist exploitation in a way, and you're trying to go to something more collective, then you kind of have to do the really, I guess, annoying thing if you're an introvert and, you know, go talk to people and try to convince them that your ideas are worth a damn.
I mean, I hear your point, but damn. It's going to be an uphill battle for some of us.
Well, and you've also entered the shit-talking mecca right here.
I like talking shit.
Yeah, but mainly we're just trying to, you know, use this platform and encourage others to actually go out into the streets and activate rather than just commentate, you know what I mean?
To speak to a black person today. That's what
Yes. We should do an episode on that. That was, I made these stickers. I photoshopped out that I voted and I changed it to I talked to a black person today. I raised $3,000.
That's amazing.
For incarceration charities. But Irving, basically, he pitched you as a guest by saying that you actually read the marijuana bill that was just passed. and that was all we needed, really. Because, you know, I read a lot of editorial around it, but I haven't actually dug into the bill. I read the governor's the press release on the governor's website. So I'd say I have if we're going to use like terrorist level warnings about how knowledgeable I am about this, I'm about a blue, green ish. Okay. The main thing about the marijuana legislation that really stood out to me, and I think that stood out to a lot of people, not just the obvious of Cuomo trying to buy back his legacy, it was that social justice and equity in the community was absolutely out front when they were selling this bill and when they were kind of explaining why it's a good thing for New Yorkers. And I think that's something that's not necessarily put out front when you hear about these bills. It comes from more of a, you know, business opportunity perspective and less like a community equity perspective, a policing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how it actually started. So that the New York bill is based on sort of the California template, you know, that was adopted by Colorado. And so it patterned the original legislation after that. Body of work, which was mostly economic. You know, there wasn't a lot of social justice or like restorative justice in the California or Colorado visions when they first came out. Those were like additions that came later in time. I think I became aware of them around 2017, 18-ish or so, that there was like people writing that into the bill itself.
When did the bill pass in Colorado? Was that in 2016?
Yeah, thereabout, because I took a trip out there shortly after it was legalized.
to do a little celebrating?
A little research.
Yeah. I was like, I want to go try legal weed. And there's mountains, you know, so I went.
Interesting. So it seems like New York had a, you know, kind of a couple years to really, I guess, draft this from a social justice angle then.
Well, I mean, they had a lot of work. They had a lot of work that had already been done to build off of. And I think that this is probably one of the more progressive pieces of legislation mm-hmm. that has come out of a state legislature in a very long time. Weed is essentially decriminalized and as close to legal as you can get in most of the states, with the exception of two, and I think it's Nebraska and Idaho. But everywhere else has at least some form of decriminalization or medical marijuana usage, marijuana policy. But this legislation really kind of takes it to the next level, to where it's just like, you know, cops can't harass you for smoking a L, you know, on, on the block. Like, you can't get, if your car smells like weed, and it makes sure to, it makes sure to stipulate burnt and unburnt. If your car smells like weed, that's not justice, justification for a search and seizure. Now, in the last episode, we kind of touched on the white boy summer, and that was something that really stayed in my head. Like, when I heard this bill passed, I said, oh, you know, wow, white people, you know, can just keep on doing what they were doing, and black people, you know, will have a massive shift in their lives, you know what I mean? So, while it was cause to celebrate, it was also very disheartening that, you know, we had that it had to come to this, like the over criminalization of marijuana, the over policing of black and brown communities, you know, and it's just been, this is a sigh of relief, I guess, but it's only a step.
A gateway, if you will.
Well played, sir. Interesting anecdote related to that. When I had been arrested in my earlier 20s once, and I was in the Tombs, you know, the Lower Manhattan holdings, there was we were locked up with a young Caucasian male who had actually been arrested for smoking on his stoop. In the, and we were in there in shock. Yes.
Like, what?
You gotta remember, the rest of the cell was literally black dudes, and it was just one white guy.
And what was he wearing?
He was actually ex-military too. He was a white t-shirt and khaki tight pants.
Oh wow.
It was like, yeah, he served, so he was like kind of built, so he wasn't you can picture him.
He probably said something. He's like, hey, put that out, son. He was like, fuck you. And he was like, all right.
Going straight into the slammer.
He didn't come across as anarcho, so. A little bit too well-dressed for that.
So was there anything about the legislation that stood out to you that would have some, you know, substantive changes for the lives of black and brown folk in the world?
I actually think the loss of being able to search people for possession of cannabis, like we had just spoken about, is absolutely huge.
Absolutely
huge. It takes a huge vector for the police to intrude on people's lives, and I like that one a lot. I'm actually really impressed that the equity sharing for the tax revenue eventually did get split the way, because Cuomo fought against it specifically for quite a bit of time. Which is a weird thing to do as a person. It's like, why would I?
and Ziggy, do you mind spelling out the allocation for our listeners?
What is it? Like 40% of the revenue is reserved for education, and another 40% for like direct grants and investment in minority communities. Nice. And then there's a little bit of healthcare justice in the end there with like drug treatment and education. I had a friend say he was going to try to, you know, teach old people about cannabis now. And I was like, I don't think there's money in teaching the elderly about weed at this point. That isn't there.
They're well aware. First, they were there when it was invented. And two, they're well aware.
But I also believe a portion of the licenses that will be distributed are reserved for people of color communities and minorities specifically as well. So that's a big one if you want to talk about economic justice. Yes. Because these kids have custom loud packs on the streets already. Like, I don't know if you guys experienced this in your New York City lives, but you know, there are people having like essentially weed trade shows. Like, you would go to like a warehouse, and it's like a whole, it's like a convention floor, like different vendors, different products, the food station. I was like, and this is cannabis. Damn. This is legitimate cannabis business. There's no reason this can't be at Jacob Javits. In the same way you have the car show, you know, you can put the fake weed truck to good use and have a show at Jacob Javits.
I see a merger with Sneaker Con in the future.
Complex Con.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, we can see you're showing your age there. No,
that's still not a thing.
I got caught in the airport with a bunch of kids on the way to Complex Con a couple years ago. That was a movie. I mean, it was just like a. It was exactly who you thought. It was just a bunch of like suburban kids wearing joggers and you know, Yeezys, and then being shocked to see someone else wearing Yeezys in the airport. You know,
I found like, my,
I thought I was the only one.
I found my community. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
My tribe is here.
They brought their mom's credit card, and you know, they was about to go ham on some Nigo signed Bapestas.
Well, I mean, to that point, like, what sort of demographic do we see being maybe a less expected angle for, you know, cannabis consumption?
I personally have a huge belief that the low dosage edible market will be absolutely huge. Because one, people already instinctively eat more than one cake or like a brownie or something just because you like to snack. So yeah. You don't want to be giving people like super brownies every single time. And then if you lower the THC content in the actual serving, it will taste more like a baked good. So you could have like really tasty treats that are like 7 milligrams each. You eat 4 of them. That's like one regular brownie. Big side. And then a lot of people don't want to smoke. Smoking as an act is unattractive to a lot of human beings in general. But if you,
very true.
You know, if you can guarantee a fun time subtly through baked goods, so it's appealing to basically everybody, I think it's going to be big. That's me.
That's a great point. I think I'd also answer to Malik's question that I think that now that marijuana is decriminalized and could be used for recreational
legal
use,
legal.
I think it's going to destigmatize it. So if you're, you know, I don't know, like a young millennial who has a salary who's never thought about smoking weed, but now it's legal and you can just buy it at your local shop, it could be more, the friction's removed and, right, the stigma's gone. Also, too, I feel like in the past couple of months, I feel like older kind of married couples who've been, you know, stuck in quarantine and, you know, now working remotely.
This sounds like the Fine Touch household.
Right? I was like, are you projecting? Speak on it.
No, I'm talking about probably the next bracket of like Zillennials, you know, like right at Gen X, you know. I feel like they're getting stoned as hell too now. They're like, oh, you know, I can get these edibles and just eat them in my house. And, oh, you know, it's a good time now. I'm not bored while watching.
Man, I think that demographic was already stoned.
Yeah, because there's two sides of this conversation, right? There's like the San Francisco, Colorado, you know, Aspen market where, you know,
some of Bruce's favorite people.
You know, where marijuana consumption was absolutely like not taboo whatsoever. And I think if it weren't for those demographics, a lot of the legislation would not have moved forward at all. And then there's the other side of the conversation. It's just like, you know, some kid on the block smoking an L because his day sucked. You know what I mean? And those are the people that are that haven't really had any say in this conversation. It's just,
yeah,
like,
but what I'm worried about, or, you know, considering is like, is this shit just going to go up market? Is it just going to be like some, you know, Dominique Ancel of edibles is going to be caking, and then the rest of the fools are going to be, you know, ass out as usual. So
people are going to be smoking joints in Soho, you know.
We already have a medical legal, so there's already pre-existing infrastructure and companies that are ready to transition as soon as they're able to. So that, you know, first to move advantage would go to them, obviously. And then you have the same thing out the gate with where obviously anyone that has the capital up front can get in the game directly, which statistically would be white people again, but the bill provides that some amount of the licenses are guaranteed for others, so we may see some balance come back that way. I would hope so. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of entrepreneurs in this state, not just New York City, in the state itself.
Yeah, so if you can, you know, smoke or consume wherever you like,
weed brunch.
We need... Exactly.
I wanted to open a lounge... like a cannabis lounge, like some of you see in Amsterdam or whatever, but no alcohol.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so, just like mixed juice cocktails or whatever, and club mate, obviously.
So Ziggy, that was a part of the bill as well, where they specifically called out this, well, I guess lounges or dedicated smoke areas.
Yep, they are allowed.
Consumption sites.
Consumption sites.
But we gotta brand this out. We gotta take it one level further, you know?
I guess Ziggy, like, yeah, can you kind of riff a bit on what you can see in the next, I guess, year, several years, 5 years in the city, like, kind of business?
Like, if you could get high at a comic book shop, how do we brand that so that it's a holistic, you know, 360-degree experience?
I don't even know. I don't think too much would change, to be honest, because the same way you can't smoke indoors in most venues anyway, that already carries over. So you're just going to see, it's basically going to be like, okay, now security won't take my weed at the door, which is really what a lot of us have wanted for a very long time, if we're being honest.
So you mean to tell me that there's not going to be a weed smoking area in Bossa Nova Civic Club? That's what you're saying?
Not on the inside. Maybe the famed backyard.
whenever that backyard comes back, but who knows? It could be like a cannabis, you know, Bossa Nova franchise.
I'll tell you, nowadays outdoor is going to be amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh yeah.
But more stuff like that would be great.
I was talking to my homie downstairs who works at the juice bar, and he has a little window, so I stop by and say hello sometimes. He's going to take some time off from there, and it sounded like he was thinking about open. He described it as a gentleman's smoke lounge. You go there, you do your self-care routine, whether it's like, I don't know, massage or face massage, and then, you know, you can consume if you'd like. And yeah, I don't know, I think there's going to be some interesting ideas what we're
going to
see
in I just want to avoid the same stuff we were already going to do, but with weed.
You know what, weed bottle service?
Yeah. Like, you know, it's inevitable, but I would prefer not to
so
see too
to
much of
that. So you mean to tell me someone's going to come out with a Voss just full of nuggets with, like, a sparkler on top? What, like, here you go.
Absolutely. It's already happening.
That's like one of those, right, like, Keef J's that are rolled in the Keef hash oil and shit. They're going to bring it out on a platter.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But how do we make sure that people don't get excluded from this? Because obviously, you know, like you said, there's statistically bent towards, you know, white people benefiting the most economically from this happening, and what, you know, black and brown people get is, like, maybe they won't get terrorized by the cops as much, you know. But how do we make sure that, like, our community doesn't get excluded from this type of change?
Well, there's a lot of time to prepare, because we shouldn't. I know that they're going to release some details on the actual licensure process in, like, the coming months or so, like a couple weeks. Not the near future, definitely not far, like a couple upcoming months. Then we probably not going to expect anything to move until 2022 for sure. So, you know, there's a few good couple of months for people to get their capital together and organize. Like, I already, you know, there's already pre-existing delivery services in this city, a lot of people waiting.
Absolutely,
to sort of take their businesses, like, in a legitimate direction, a clean direction.
And I say, don't make it corny, you know, don't make that the only attraction to your business. Like, if you're gonna have a storefront or a location, like, have other reasons for people to go and kick it there.
Well, the bar for entry is lower for things not related directly to cannabis production, because, you know, if you're going to, like, sell actual flower itself, then the margins are different, because, you know, you got to grow a shit ton of weed, so you need a lot of indoor space. There's not going to be a lot of outdoor grows, unless you're talking about, like, upstate, where they have the space for it. And even then, you know, you generally don't want to grow outside, because it's harder to control that environment. But because of, like, the pre-existing legal medical structure, so, you know, there's opportunities for people that want to get into, like, concentration of cannabis products, because then you can sell, like, your oils to a variety of businesses. So people that want to impregnate the oil in, like, their food or their hair products or their massage oils, that's another route that you could take. So again,
yeah,
that's another opportunity vector that's pretty ripe.
What I want you to do is count to 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. On 1, you will be asleep. 1. I'm a blunt getting smoked and I can't wake up. I'm a blunt getting smoked and I can't wake up. I'm a blunt getting smoked and I can't wake up. I'm a blunt getting smoked and I can't wake up. I'm dreaming.
You would think that, hemp would already have been like given an exception for production, considering it's not even actually psychoactive. Like that's
no, we live in a Puritan. We live in a you know a puritanical regime.
Apparent. Well, I mean, there's some easing of restrictions because there's somebody who's trying to make their automobile bodies out of hemp, like sort of a really? Hemp type of fiberglass. Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting. I gotta look that one up.
You know, there are.
Is NASA doing that research? Like, damn.
Nah. It's this company called Aptera.
Just some nigga from Oakland.
Basically.
His branding is on point, though.
Scientists out here.
Yeah.
Got the whole lab in the backyard.
But also, as far as the national conversation is concerned, like the Biden administration really hasn't been super consistent about their understanding or what they want to tell people about their position on marijuana legalization.
I don't know. I think they've been pretty clear that they're not interested in it.
So the Democratic platform, I think, they made a lot of promises. You know, I'm still kind of salty about that $2,000 check. But, you know, they like to sell themselves as more progressive than they actually are. And something in the news very recently was that when the Biden transition team was, you know, putting out their feelers for applicants, they said that they wouldn't exclude applicants because of prior marijuana use. And then shortly thereafter, after the Biden administration took office, they were all asked to quit because of their past marijuana use.
You can't have reefer madness tainting Diamond Joe's
reputation. I mean, Kamala Harris loves weed. Like,
also, and I know the answer to this too. They say you oppose legalizing weed.
That's not true.
I know.
and look, I joke about it, half joking. Half my family's from Jamaica. Are you kidding me?
They'd be so mad at you. Have you ever smoked?
I have.
Okay.
Like in college, I inhale. I did inhale. Okay.
So if it was legalized all throughout the country and medicinal, would you, you know, do it?
Listen, again? I think that it gives a lot of people joy, and we need more joy.
She said she smoked it one time.
Remind me to put that KRS song in here. I'm going to blunt get smoked that I can't wake up. Remember? Remind me to put that in here.
Well, I mean, most polls have shown that majority of Americans actually are in favor of cannabis legalization generally. And I think when you look at the places who've done it successfully, it's not really surprising that they have. It's sort of inevitable. You know, it's like, it's just like waiting for dominoes to fall. And it's kind of, like the places where it remains illegal is absolutely a political decision. There's nothing else driving it.
Yeah.
Idaho and Nebraska.
Very essentially. True. We got lucky, you know. Life handed us some interesting circumstances to sort of make this a thing.
I mean, the timing is perfect, right? I mean, now the vaccine's out, there's a lot more people getting vaccinated in the city. And then it's, you know, what, April, you know, you May,
start
June.
Start passing the spliff.
It's gonna get warm outside.
Without just no, with the normal concerns and no no extra concerns.
Like, are you actually gonna put money in or what? That type of concern.
Yeah. You got five on it. but the other part of this conversation. Are the criminal justice ramifications. I mean, the black and brown people are overrepresented in the prison population. They said that all people who have criminal records for nonviolent marijuana offenses, their records will be completely expunged. Now, you can expunge somebody's record, but you can't necessarily expunge somebody's trauma. In that, and you know, there's generations of victims of the war on drugs that can't either get years of their life back that they spent incarcerated, or they just can't get like their emotional fortitude back, or they were, you know, put out of the job market. A lot of people got disenfranchised from the system because of the war on drugs, but specifically just the over criminalization of marijuana that seemed to you know, exists completely differently, like in other communities.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely self-selective enforcement.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wait, I believe they also expunged records for people who had possession charges under certain amount, and that was also a very big deal.
Mm. Yes,
so it was like you know you didn't get in trouble just for having shit on you, which is kind of smart.
How about people who are currently incarcerated for marijuana, like possession charges? Is there anything in this bill that I guess addresses them specifically?
I'm not aware of anything that does anything for anyone. Like, we're not releasing people from jail.
Right. And I get a sense that, I mean, just by browsing through my Twitter feed, that I feel like there's been voices out there that have been pushing for that. I mean, I think expunging past possession records is like a great step forward, but yeah, you know, I'm sure there could be more that could be done to help out people who are currently impacted by this, or you know, incarcerated for.
Well, the restorative justice movement in New York City, at least, is pretty strong, and a lot of the voices that are pushing for these things are coming out of those groups inside the city itself.
Yeah, a friend of mine actually. You know, when I sent her the article, the New York Times article, when they finally passed the legislation, and she said, that's cool, but like, what about like direct reparations? You know, the 40% of the projected $350 million tax revenue is going to be allocated to communities most impacted by this over-policing. However, it won't come in the form of direct reparations. It'll clearly give people an opportunity to participate in the market. But, you know, as I said, there are people, so many people disenfranchised and like financially and economically hurt. What's your stance on direct reparations versus, you know, just kind of this ambient?
I'm actually in favor of reparations because it's the only way you're going to get anything that approaches equitable out the environment. You know, there's just like a lot of social drama that kind of surrounds that, where people who, you know, feel they are removed from the incidents of damage themselves should not have to now carry that burden. And, you know, that's a separate conversation, but I'm generally in favor of reparations and direct reparations. I believe that, you know, like, if you can readily identify someone who has been like actively harmed, it's like, hey, we put all these people in jail for like carrying, you know, like 4 ounces of weed on them, and we just made it legal. We should let all of them go now. Like, that's step one. And then it's like, and then the bunch of people who like went to jail and served sentences for this, and it may have negatively impacted their lives, maybe for a window of time, let us directly pay them with some of these initial profits, you know, like. None of these are things that aren't feasible. You just have to ask for it and, you know, talk someone into writing it on a piece of paper and getting it signed, which takes a lot of work. But the point is that you can do it.
Yeah, totally.
It can be done. But in terms of market access, too, another interesting angle is just that because of the taxes involved with legalized cannabis, the black market still maintains itself. And so if you think about where a lot of the dollars go to in those networks, it would also have a positive impact directly in the community itself. Like, I think from both ways, the communities that have been negatively harmed that can actually benefit from it, still on the black market and even legally.
Would you even still consider it a black market and not just like an alternative market?
That's true.
Or is that definition? Yeah, because
I mean, are they paying taxes?
They're not paying taxes, so you know the feds are.
No.
I think that's where the line gets drawn.
Yeah,
but I believe
everybody wants to call themselves a CEO.
You can grow like 3 plants on your person and sell it to your friends, and no one's gonna like beat you up over that.
CEO,
yeah,
the IRS will know.
Yeah,
so proprietorships out here, 2021 summer.
LLC registrations have just gone up. But yeah, that was another part of the bill. Is like, cops can't bother you if drugs change hands, if marijuana changes hands, just as long as there's no money involved. But little do they know that, you know, we figured that out a long time ago.
The internet.
Yeah, and you know, drugs, you never keep the drugs and the money in the same place. You know, again, I watched The Wire.
And I was like, somebody watched Paid in Full recently.
You know, don't get high on your own supply. I'm trying to think of all the cinematic cliches about the drug business. So, yeah. I will be watching Blow after we get off the call here.
Damn, great movie. I haven't seen that one in a while.
Yeah.
I guess the one topic that's missing out of this conversation is, how does the NYPD feel about this? Because now that
they're pissed, bro. Come
they're
on.
They're pissed, right? like they must be so...
Why do these motherfuckers love working so much?
Angry.
That's what I want to know.
Like, they're not
anyone that loves their job that much.
No. The NYPD's in crisis now because now they don't have the tool to hit their quota every month. You know what I mean?
To terrorize. They lost one tool in their campaign to terrorize black and brown
people. They're like, damn, now we gotta just gotta be
and
openly.
Poor, and poor people.
We just now have to be openly racist and be honest about it now.
Listen, you know, one step towards the truth at a time.
Yeah. I read something. They were just like, my homie OJ, he runs this Instagram account called High Love New York, and it's basically it acts as just basically like a bulletin board for a lot of like social justice and community stuff going on in New York. And he wrote in the Instagram post, he was like, I can't believe I have to say this, but don't pass a police officer a blunt. Don't do it. Because you know motherfuckers be out there. They're like, spark it up. No, nigga, you go to jail. If only.
Why would anyone be trying to smoke with a cop? I'm trying to think about what segment of the cannabis community that currently exists.
We're trying to smoke with NYPD. 18-year-olds, you know, who are just like, yeah, I'm ready to mess with the cops right now. Fuck it.
I guess. You hanging out at Carmelo's, yeah.
Like, if you're going to try to pass a cop a blunt, you're moving different already.
Yeah. That's true. This is true.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Hey, man, as the community grows, it changes. So you got to look out.
Yeah. It will be interesting times. We won't see anything, I think, before 2023, realistically. Like, in terms of anyone actually setting something up that can be sold.
Interesting.
I got you. And why do you think there'll be that much gap in time?
Well, you got to grow it. So, like, it's legal to grow now, like, on a personal scale, but the license infrastructure hasn't been set up yet, so, you know. I'm sure there's going to be some language around how you transition pre-existing inventory into like the legal product flow, I guess.
Yeah, I guess there's no like Humboldt County equivalent in New York State.
Nah.
So I guess the green rush isn't happening just yet.
Oh no, it's right. The money's already there. People are lined up, bro.
The capital's there. Hedge funds are ready. Like, there's
gonna be a lot of weed.
Brick and mortars being purchased right now.
You said there's gonna be a lot more weed apps.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the wine pairing apps. No, it'd just be weed pairing apps.
Oh wow!
What I didn't read into is the
smoke this strain for your specific zodiac sign.
Exactly. We're gonna have a lot of weed connoisseurs out here. You know? I've been smoking weed for three months, and I'm all about this like indica sativa hybrid like strain or something.
I mean, it's funny though. Like this. For all intents and purposes, this is a very historic piece of legislation, but it also feels like this is a very old conversation.
Well, it is.
Like a generations old, like multiple generations old conversation.
Yeah. I feel like the general reaction was like, about time.
Yeah.
It's long overdue. It's like one of those things that's just like, thank you. It was already basically at that point. Listen, I've like canvassed a lot of buildings in the Bronx now. Just doing volunteer work, and you always smell weed. Always.
Yeah,
it's like a feature of the environment in general. It's just like it might as well already be legal in the minds of the citizens. So it's just the legal infrastructure catching up to that.
It's pretty much the government in New York figuring out how to tax it, pretty much, huh?
Well, it doesn't seem that complicated. I mean, it
Well, I'm sure there was a lot of tense backroom deals about, hey, this is how much we're going to tax this, you know. And that whole structure, I'm pretty sure, was like what was being debated pretty heavily.
Well, I think they had to decide between, like, do I want this giant pot of money in the form of tax revenue, or do I want to keep terrorizing black people? And, like, you know.
They did a cost-benefit analysis. They're like, well.
Which brings us more joy.
Yeah.
This exactly. Bar graph over here is pretty high, so.
Listen, Upstate would like some money as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and this could be the industry that revitalizes flyover country, if we can ever get to that point, because we're not making shit anymore. You know, all that shit got offshored, you know, decades ago.
I guess, yeah, like, I mean, so Ziggy, you mentioned you went out to, you know, Colorado and Denver to go check out the legal flower there and stuff. Like, how do you, like, do you expect this to be, like, a pretty revolutionary market here in New York? Like, in terms of, amount of capital being invested, amount of entrepreneurs coming here to set up shop? Like, is this going to be a blowout kind of industry throughout the city?
I think it's going to make money, and because it's a new shiny thing, there's going to be a lot of attempts at it. That's just not, like, it's honest truth. New York City is a big market. It's one of the largest financial markets in the world. Of course, it's going to be a capital explosion of people making money off of weed. That's given statement. You know, the question is who gets there first and what does it look like? You know, like, are you going to see Baked by Melissa with Baked by Melissa edibles? How fast is that transition going to happen? You don't know. Will people support their more grassroots business ventures? That's something to look out for, too. Because, you know, if people know that it's been their friends hustling on the side for a long time and now they have a chance to go legitimate with their business, will they continue to support those people directly, or will they go to the people that had the ability to stand up their infrastructure quickly and have really sweet marketing on top?
Yep.
I mean, exactly. You know, those are consumer choices. I mean,
your local drug dealer.
I actually expect that to happen. I'm not even, like, the most popular dudes in every hood will probably have. It'll be like a barber shop, bro. It's like the same way you go to, like, the liquor store in your hood. It's like the weed spot now.
They're gonna become so successful. You know, they're like, you guys doubted me all these years, and guess what, baby? Boom.
Well, so that's the other thing about it too, is because cannabis isn't federally legal, you have to do most of your transactions in cash. And so, you know, now that presents interesting situation in certain environments, because
cash on hand is not a good idea.
Damn. So that requires, I guess, a high level security in your brick and mortar.
Yeah, every brick and mortar cannabis shop. And I've been in the three legal states, and all three legal states do it basically the same way. It's like you have security, the sections are essentially divided. Like, there's a waiting room, and then there's a place you can go to the cannabis. Well, not if some of them you just gotta, like, wait in line.
So pretty much it's like going into a jewelry shop. You know, there's a
or security. Like a doctor's office.
Oh, okay.
If you want to think about that setup, like when you used to go to your primary care physician when you were a kid, and it was the one room with all the other kids,
and then you got
buzzed into the back. That's basically right. What the experience is like.
But yeah, no, I mean, having all that cash on hand is definitely presents some level of risk, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, it's because credit card companies, you know, they can't
take it.
They can't process payments.
Yeah, but you know, PayPal's starting to offer Bitcoin now, so it's like, hey, why can't we just, you know, transact on crypto with the weed purchases, right? I mean, that could be the loophole for you know, for the payments.
You're gonna get yelled at about it not being green.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very inefficient. You know, we want to decentralize the global banking system, but we're also perfectly happy to burn the earth down. Right.
You're gonna burn off like a fraction of the Amazon forest just to buy like an eighth of weed in, you know, New York or some shit.
Do you see companies like Amazon, DoorDash, Grubhub, Uber, Lyft, all of those, you know, companies who already have like a distribution infrastructure to to basically, you know, get on top of these things at a local level and say,
Bruce,
like,
you can be your own boss. You can set your own hours.
No, I'm just
no, because they would have done it already. Remember, we already have a bunch of legal states. That opportunity was already there, and they haven't done it. Why would they do it just because New York has it now? So that's my response to that. It was like,
interesting.
Plus, they do, they pay federal taxes. They're like federal entities. They can't do weed business in one state and then risk their profits. Mm-hmm. It's not worth it for them.
So there can be big weed then. Big weed can't happen if it's not.
No, big weed already exists because there are companies that just move from legal state to legal state. Like, you'll see it in New York too, when people start getting products at stores. You're gonna start seeing like brands that are in Colorado and shit. Mm. Especially on the chocolate side. You know, you don't see it for like the flower itself because, you know, interstate trafficking, but for edibles stuff. You know, they'll just come to the state, set up shop.
So with edibles, for example, like, is it possible to ship that to another state if you like did it online?
So there was recent discussion or somebody or legislation where it was essentially the USPS will not carry cannabis products between state lines anymore. Mm. Like, that was a discussion that was being had. So apparently the jig is up on everyone mailing products from legal states to other legal states.
Is this a product of the DeJoy administration?
would not be surprised, but don't quote me on that. It was just something that I saw in passing recently.
Okay.
So it's like, it's a conversation that is happening incidentally.
Just get a vacuum sealer.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, man, all right, maybe, you know, like, in this new world where weed is illegal in New York, like, maybe, you know, somebody's traveling to Miami, you know, they go to the airport and, like, you know, they kind
of. Most of the airports already have their own, like, hands off, like, per airport hands off policies when it comes to that. Like, TSA just generally doesn't care as long as it's not flower.
Okay.
And technically, when you're in there are certain parts of an airport where it's like state land and federal land. Mm-hmm. So, like,
once
you could
security.
Mm-hmm. Once you cross security, you're on, you know, federal property. So they just, you're good. Like, they don't care. Mm. Just don't be, you know, bringing pounds in the Rimowa. You know what I mean?
Don't just try to smoke out the TSA person right after you get through. Like,
you know, they steal that shit and smoke it themselves.
the evidence room is lit, man.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What do you all do with all that stuff in the back room, huh?
They sell it back on the streets. What do you mean?
Have you ever heard of civil forfeiture?
It's a very, very disturbing habit.
Yeah.
Literally state theft.
Yeah, like the state can rob you.
And they
flip
do.
It. And flip
and
it.
And they do.
Mm-hmm. Well, are we talking about taxes again?
Yep. No, we're talking about civil forfeiture because there's more value and stuff the cops take legally through that method than there is in total robberies in a year.
Yeah.
So they're just running their hustle.
My sister lives in Atlanta, and she sent me a picture of a new police vehicle from, like, I think the Cobb police or something. And it was a Tesla Model Y.
Yeah.
And it had a sticker on the back, though, that said, "Your local drug dealer paid for this."
Yo,
they're on that Saudi Arabia shit. You're gonna start seeing Lamborghini cop cars.
I was like, the audacity to put that vinyl sticker on the back, though.
Oh,
yeah.
They probably drove that through the hood where they arrested the dude too.
Love your work.
Employee of the month right there.
Yeah. Thanks, bro. It's got air conditioning.
They were very proud of that shit. I was like, this is crazy. Oh.
Yeah,
Why the cops are so antagonistic to brothers and sisters trying to feed their family?
Is there any American other cultural dream. Stuff we want to hit this week? Any other cultural stuff?
Honestly, I know. I haven't really been paying attention to anything. So you work with robots. How do you feel about the Boston Dynamics dog being used by the NYPD?
It's a very bitter
60 minutes out here.
It's so bad. So the thing with Boston Dynamics is they were always DARPA funded from the beginning out of MIT. So just get that out the way. They were like,
yes.
But let me tell you something. Their engineering team is ridiculously good, bro. Like, if you are into, like, robotics at all, the stuff they're doing is, like, S tier, you know, fighting
they
game.
They got acquired recently, right?
Yeah, I believe, damn it, it was a Japanese company. I can't remember the name right now. Okay. Oh, SoftBank, yeah.
Oh, it was SoftBank?
Oh, yeah. The Vision Fund?
But they do a lot of really cool robotics, but see, because well,
can they just
robotics,
do research? Like, can
no,
they, can
they had to eventually
on...
make money off of all the money they already got, and obviously it was going to go to, like, you know, police state activities. You know, they're transitioning into doing warehousing bots. You see, they have their one, their new model for working in warehouses. I can't remember the name of it right now.
That thing's super impressive.
It is.
It's got, like, wheels on the bottom, and it goes, fetches boxes, and then brings it back to the assembly line or something.
Yeah, the arm is really
well
designed.
No more unions.
Basically, that's what I was like, shit.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, if you know you're going to do it, why even fight the union then? That's my perspective. I was like, you're gonna try to get rid of all of these jobs anyway.
So is that even more of a justification for, like, universal basic income and
yeah, absolutely.
A proper welfare state?
Dude, as a person in the technology, the whole point of all of the stuff that we keep making is to, like, make some other job easier.
Yes.
And if you keep doing that, inevitably you will make all the things that require jobs not really be necessary to the extent that we're, like, making people work. And
argue that we've already passed that extent.
Yeah, like, we're in the zone.
We could go full luxury and live. If I worked, you know, 18 hours a week, I could be, you know, potentially just as productive.
Yeah, but see, our society's power structure isn't, like, organized around that shit.
It's organized around the illusion of me working 40 hours a week.
Essentially.
The work I could be doing.
Yo, what Malik does talk about is not working, bro. He does talk about that a lot. I'm always impressed.
I mean, I definitely got fired from a job, and the owner said that he didn't see me enough. He didn't say anything about my productivity. He didn't say I was doing a bad job. He didn't say, you know.
Yeah, you didn't drink the Kool-Aid, bro.
Yeah.
You didn't drink the Kool-Aid.
He's like, I don't see you enough. He's like, so you want me to just sit here for 8 hours and do my 40 minutes of work and sit here for 8 hours? Like, nah. Yeah. Nah, that's not happening.
You know,
cue the,
like,
theme music.
For, like, 2 years.
We're out. We're done on that note.
That's crazy.
It's been real.
I think, yeah, I think I exposed the scam, and they were trying to get rid of me. I got purged from the island, you know what I mean? So, oh, anyway. All right,
he's,
I think
just
we
too
got...
efficient. He's just too efficient.
I was the only brother in office, too. Mm-mm. They wasn't having that.
Damn.
But I was removed. And the dude emailed me. He was like, don't come into the office to get your paycheck. I was
like, you're like, no, bro. I'm going in the office.
Yeah, I'm absolutely going. That'll do it for another episode of the Savage Mode Podcast. Very special thank you to Ziggy Leacock for hopping in the session with us. You can find us on all platforms, Spotify, Podcast, Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Twitter at Savage Mode Pod, savagemodepod.com for any additional information. Leave us a rating and subscribe and all that good stuff. We'll see you next time. Peace. Thank you.